I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. You can subscribe to TCS on YouTube at youtube.com/TechCentral or find us in your favorite podcasting app. All you have to do is search Tech Central, one word, in whichever podcasting app you prefer, be it Spotify, YouTube Music, Pocket Casts, all the major ones, we are there. Now, George Mendes is CEO of CelSea, and he's been in that role for just over a year now. And he is well into his strategy to start to turn around the mobile operator, and recently did a big brand refresh and relaunch, which seems to have gone very well. And I'm very pleased to say that George Mendes is now in the studio with me to chat about this and where CelSea is going. George, it's really good to see you. Thanks for making the time.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here and really appreciate it. Lots on the go. Very exciting times.
Absolutely. So, George, you've been at CelSea for just over a year. You had a good career going at Vodacom, from what I could tell. How did the CelSea opportunity come along, and what made you decide to jump?
Yeah, actually, it's a great question. And I think over time, I've realized myself what I prefer doing and not prefer doing. And the one thing that I really like is fixing or building. Mm-hmm. I struggle probably a little bit more with, let me call them, maintenance type role. And I'm not suggesting that Vodacom was a maintenance role. You need to stay in front for that amount of time and over the years.
How long have you been there
incredible.
For?
23 years with wow. Vodacom, and then a little bit longer because I started at Telstra Cellular in 1994. So almost 28 years.
Okay, so your whole career has been in the cellular industry.
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. And I started as a call center agent.
Okay.
So I've pretty much done everything, and I would recommend that everyone who starts somewhere starts right at the beginning and understands the real impact of customers and in the business and so on. It's a really good place to learn and understand stuff. But I had a great career there. And the shift, I was actually going to leave the country. I had an opportunity abroad in the Middle East. And then during that process, this opportunity came along and lots of discussions took place. I don't think they told me everything, because when I arrived, I found out some stuff. Maybe that's why I took the role. But on a serious note, really exciting challenge. I love the ingredients that CelSea has, and that creates a wonderful opportunity for us to take something to the market that's quite unique, be a little bit disruptive, if I can put it that way, and carve out a niche for CelSea in its new format. Mm-hmm. And that's very intriguing for me, and building an amazing team to make sure that we could go and execute. So that's a lot of the interest came from that, mm-hmm. and the opportunity to do something quite unique and special.
But you must have looked at all the headlines regarding CelSea over many years and known that this was a distressed business. It's been through, I think, three recapitalizations in its time. I think many people assumed it was simply going to go to the wall. But you've come in, you've decided that this thing was worth getting involved with, worth saving. Why? What attracted you to this business? What was it about CelSea that you said, well, you know, I could have taken this presumably lucrative opportunity in the Middle East, but no, let me stay in South Africa and take on this very big challenge?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. Firstly, I really love the country, and so I genuinely want to make a contribution, and I think we can add tremendous value. And as a country, we are full of optimism, and we have our own challenges. In the same vein, CelSea is kind of a replica of the country. It's full of challenges, but lots of opportunity. Is it going to get fixed? Yes, full of excitement, full of optimism, but real challenges everywhere you go. It is true. When I looked at the headlines and I've seen CelSea from the outside, it looked chaotic. It looked problematic. It looked financially distressed. Will it continue to survive? And in fact, as part of the process of meeting the board and so on, the very things that I noticed from the outside, so from the outside looking in, mm-hmm. in terms of my observations, turned out to be exactly right, but probably just deeper and wider in terms of magnitude of the different topics. So when you look at the outside and you say, well, this organization has been recapped a number of times, it's probably about 44 billion that's been wiped out. 99.789% of organizations like this close the doors. Mm-hmm. It's that small, tiny little percentage that make it that will become an unbelievable business. And I think that's where we are. I know I sound optimistic, but I really love the ingredients that CelSea's got. And I think with that tiny percentage of organizations that make it through these horrible times and come out the other side succeeding.
What was going through your head after your first week on the job?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've been asked this a few times, and did you ever consider changing your mind? Have you made the right decision? Honestly, not for a second have I thought I'd made the wrong choice.
Okay.
It never crossed my mind at all. I went straight into solution mode, but I can tell you that my eyes have never been bigger. The stuff that I saw, my eyes were like saucers, and I said, it's not possible for all this to happen to one organization. When you take cash flow, when you look at agreements, when you look at structure, the strategy, I really was kind of disturbed in a way that said, this is not possible. How could this be possible in an organization? So, but honestly speaking, not for a moment that I think, sure, have I made the wrong choice. We went into solution mode and started cracking on with what we needed to do to fix the business.
So did you really have to start from scratch here?
I think it's worse than that, right? Starting from scratch is one thing. It's kind of a level playing field. When you're starting on a minus, you look at the significant amount of debt, a strategy going in a particular direction, an organization structured for that strategy. I mean, we had very little hope of creating a level of success with those ingredients. Things had to change. So that's what I mean by kind of a minus, right? If you're starting on the level playing field, that's not too bad. I think we were starting on significant minuses almost everywhere. And that has created a significant amount of innovation. I think organizations and individuals in times of real difficulty, in survival mode, there's a huge amount of creativity and innovation that comes to the fore to survive. And I think we've been able to tap into that. I've learned a new skill, how to try and negotiate with nothing. Whoever starts at a certain rent value and I start at zero and I just stay there until the conversation's finished because there is no money. So it's a completely different skill. But again, on a serious note, I think we've had tremendous partners on this journey that have helped us stay alive, that have helped us recognize that this organization has a place in South Africa. It's a South African brand. It's 22 years old. It's well loved. I'm surprised that, you know, if you take Kantar, most loved brands, we're still in the top 30, and we were extremely quiet. You know, we hadn't been talking to the market for years and years, and to command that presence of brand is something special about Celsius.
It's been said many times and denied by the other operators that Cell C was effectively handicapped at the start when Vodacom and MTN dramatically raised the price of interconnection fees between operators, and that they did this, it is said, deliberately to handicap Cell C at launch. Is that a fair criticism, do you think? And do you think Cell C was handicapped by that?
Absolutely. And, you know, people have said it's easy for you to say now you're on the other side. And the truth is, I've come to my senses.
Okay.
You know, the reality is that it was the case. If you look at termination rates, they were pretty much not there. And at the entrance of Cell C, those termination rates were skyrocketed. Now, just practically how that would work, if someone's got all the market share and you're going to land all the time on someone else's network and pay that rate from a voice calling perspective, circuit switch voice calling, you're on a hiding to nothing. And, you know, when you take 22 years ago, circuit switch voice calling was dominant. You know, today you can say data and voice over IP or voice over LTE and so on. You say, well, that is a declining revenue stream, fine. But 22 years ago, it wasn't the case at all. It was on the up, significant margin, major revenue contributor. And Cell C got handicapped at the start, is the truth.
Mm-hmm. And the debt it got into over the years, I mean, it was obviously trying to compete on network investment with Vodacom and MTN, which has been a big strategic shift we've seen in Cell C in the last couple of years. How did Cell C get into this very precarious position? Was it mainly the result of trying to compete on CapEx with the big players? Was it a result of the regulatory environment, which was skewed against Cell C? Was it another factor?
I think it's a couple of things. The one is, you know, strategies are exactly that. It's a strategy, it's the direction the organization takes. Some turn out to be right, some turn out to be wrong. You have to make sure that you got the right balance sheet if you want to play in certain categories. I'll give a classic example. Video streaming has kind of been a blunder by most networks, Cell C included with Black, and that squanders a significant amount of money. But if you take the entire lifespan, I think one, you need deep pockets to build infrastructure, and the two main players do that really well. Let's just call a spade a spade. I think Vodacom and MTN build great quality networks. And so to compete, you're going to need at least 10 billion a year now on CapEx. And as I've said before, for us to get to this position that we're in now, we would comfortably have to put in at least 35, 40, 45 billion of CapEx, and then another 10 billion every year. So it's a difficult model to compete with.
Impossible.
Pretty much. If you don't have the pockets, and even I would suggest if you do have the money, does it make sense? You know, I'm more and more, when you look at the return on investment on capital deployed, it just doesn't make sense anymore to have four base stations next to each other with four generators, four security guards, four transmission links, four people delivering diesel to the generators, and so on. I don't think it makes a difference anymore in mainly saturated markets where you've got more than two players, I think for sure. And as the technology is evolved, it's become more and more difficult to get that return on investment. You know, if you look at South Africa with the money that's gone into batteries and energy, huge amount of billions just to keep the lights on, so to speak. 5G doesn't give you a great return on investment, a little bit of opportunity in enterprise, you know, so improved latency. But even to get that efficiency on your network, you still need to invest more from a density point of view. So a bit of a catch-22. So it makes it difficult to invest in infrastructure and get a good return. Now, if you have four or five players, I don't think this makes any sense. So I think that was probably a little bit of a blunder. But one wouldn't have known that at the time. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, given where the market was, it's very easy for me now to look back with hindsight over 22 years and say, probably there we went wrong and there we went wrong. So I think the infrastructure strategy, for sure, we're on the right path now. There's no doubt in my mind. And I think it's a good partnership because you effectively provide revenue to two players that build infrastructure, and they can decide to put it straight to bottom line or to invest a partial amount of that revenue into infrastructure and continue to build out the network. So I think that works well. And to be brutally honest, you know, no customer really gets excited about which bakery the bread roll came out of. I think the product to the customer now is about, do my bread rolls have sprinkles on or egg wash on or sesame seeds, and do yours get delivered or you collect them? Is it in a package of four or six or two, et cetera, et cetera? I think that's where the value is created for customers rather than where the factory is of the production of the actual megabytes and minutes. So I think this model is a good one because it kind of creates revenue for the other players that they can do various things, as I've mentioned. It creates a competing position for us in terms of quality of network, and I think that then allows real competition to flourish in the market, which is effectively what the industry wants, the sector, and what the consumers want.
You published some details of your results recently. They were to the period, was it the 5 months to end of May or 12 months to end of May that
12
you published? 12 months to end of May 2024. Can you maybe just take us through what your balance sheet looks like now post the recap and whether that balance sheet makes you comfortable?
Yeah, look, the balance sheet still has a significant amount of debt. The reality is a lot of that debt, probably four and a bit billion, is shareholder debt. And so for us, that's okay for now. It's acceptable.
Because is that mainly Blue Label?
Mainly Blue Label, correct. So there's a significant amount of choices that you can then take in the next coming years on how to manage that. But I think we haven't had the necessity to use our own balance sheet for now. So our focus has been on trying to manage a P&L on a monthly basis and for the fiscal. I mean, we were cash flow negative in large quantities when I joined. I think a couple more months and we could be in a neutral position. And that's a big shift for us, right? Because no investor, no matter how much funding you've got, can continue just to put money into an organization that doesn't wash its face. So there's still a significant amount of airtime sitting in a virtual vault, if you like, which was part of the funding on the Blue Label side. So the intention is then obviously over time to start unwinding some of that. And then there's some long-term debt in terms of leases and stuff like that with a number of providers, and that's to the tune of about $2 billion. So I think it's looking better. The intention is to run the business at a profitable level month to month. I don't see free cash over the next 4 to 5 years when you look at there will be free cash on an operating level, but when you look at the debt that you got to erode over the next 4 years or so, I think you'll use all the cash to wipe that out. And then you've got an amazing business. So, of course, we have to perform. We have to meet the targets. I think our targets are stretchy but realistic. We want to carve out just small pieces in the different categories. So for now, I think we're very much trending in the right direction and don't need our own balance sheet for now. It's also part of the process at the moment where Blue Label is applying for an extra 4.4 to take them from 49 to 53, so effectively from majority to control. That process is underway. We have a public hearing set up for the 19th of September.
That's with ICASA.
With ICASA, correct. And then I think the ComCom is somewhere around October. We don't have the dates firmed up yet. And then we'll know the outcome of that. And then effectively you've got a controlling shareholder and then you become a full subsidiary and so on. So I think that also aligns financial years. We've had a Jan to December fiscal. Then we've had a short five-month period now from Jan to May, and now we're fully aligned with Blue Label from June to next year, May. So effectively, we finished the quarter now of our new fiscal.
So what is it going to mean to you and Cell C having a controlling shareholder?
I think it's good news. I think it's a shareholder that is certainly very supportive of this version of Cell C, of this management team and this strategy. So I think that's great. I think the opportunities are untapped so far. I'm quite surprised and pleasantly surprised by the amount of opportunity that we would have as and total ecosystem when you look at Blue Label. Look at the entities that they've got inside their group. There's a lot that we can do that can we can collaborate and add value to each other beyond the core products of kind of voice and data from our perspective. So I think very supportive, very aligned. I would have, if I was in their position, wanted control a long time ago. The amount of money that's been put into the organization and not having control becomes quite ominous, if you like. I mean, it's punished their share price completely. There's no doubt in my mind that Cell C has dragged it down. So everybody's waiting to see what's going on with Cell C and then see if there's value. From my perspective, super optimistic. I think there's only upside. It is the last roll of the dice. I don't say that lightly. I don't think you can continuously be kind of in and out of the market. We need to make a full go of this. But I'm really confident that we can carve out a really nice position for ourselves.
A last chance saloon for Cell C.
Absolutely, I think so. But a good one. You know, I don't say that in a desperate kind of way. I say it in a very optimistic way. I've never felt more confident, to be honest, around the ingredients that we've got, the timing in the market, the circumstances. I think they all bode well for what we're trying to do, including the MVNO structure, right? We want to make sure that there's a lot of effort going in there. So I think we're well poised for this.
Mm-hmm. I want to chat about the MVNOs, but just lastly on Blue Label, how do you work with the Levy brothers at Blue Label? Do you interact with them on a daily basis or is it more hands-off than that?
No, so we deal with each other a lot. A lot of it is ideation, to be brutally honest. So okay. I think we all know they're entrepreneurs and they're really good at that. And so you've got to concentrate because there's 100 ideas going on at the same time. And what we don't have is unlimited resources, both in terms of people, funding, and time to chase all the ideas. So we kind of got to package things and say, okay, these are decent ones to go after, et cetera. But I think we're a wonderful relationship, very supportive. So we have some formalized structures, and then we have a lot of informal conversations and get-togethers and meetings. We're working really well together. So I'm enjoying it. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. So.
Okay, good to hear. Good to hear. So you have said publicly that you want to regain the third market position from Telkom, which took Cell C a number of years ago. I presume you mean by the number of SIM cards rather than revenue market share. How's it going? How's that strategy going? And what do you need to do to get there? Yeah. It's a big ask.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if you create, I mean, this is not having a go at Telkom for that matter, because who knows, the market share between 1 and 3 could also change. Mm-hmm. So effectively what we're saying is we don't want to be lost. Now, you could land up with a situation where over time, you know, a 50% market share operator and a 35% share operator changes the picture altogether and you can land up with 4 25%. That's also possible. Now, if we had to get to that position, that would be amazing. So for me, it's not chasing Telkom per se, or even Vodacom or MTN for that matter. It's creating a position that's quite audacious, but realistic at the same time for Cell C that we can go after. If we're very conservative, then we will do exactly that. We'll do small conservative things to just try and keep us there. And I think that's not a safe position to be in. You need to go after something reasonable. These conversations I remember having right in the beginning, the first few weeks that I was at Cell C. And that's where this comes from. The philosophy and the direction of travel is still the same. We still want to make sure that we regain a number of customers and a significant amount of associated revenue to put us in a position that is sustainable and make sure that we never have these kind of blunders again. So it's less about which entity we're going after, but it's taking a significant amount of share that I think is there for the taking, given the Cell C position.
What type of customers do you want to attract? Is it you're mainly a prepaid business at the moment. Do you want to grow the contract side of the business by maybe luring away some contract customers from the big two networks?
It's a combination. So our strategic pillars are our number, and I'll talk to them. So I think we've got a very strong prepaid business, a good solid base. I think there's some growth there as Cell C in its own format and brand. I think there's an opportunity for prepaid customers in the MVNO space. So we need to make sure that we enable our MVNO partners with all the right ingredients, CVM capability, pricing, reporting, and know-how, so that we can align on how do we extract value by marrying the behaviors of both entities. So if you're a bank or a retailer, what are those behaviors that you want to unlock, and what can we bring to the table as a telco and really put something that's really what customers want out there. So there's a number of MVNOs that are prepaid and a number that are postpaid. So some will go after prepaid business, some will go after postpaid business. We haven't done anything in enterprise, so we think there's an opportunity to carve out a little bit of enterprise or B2B activity. Certainly SME and SOHO is very similar to consumer behavior. We think there's an opportunity there. In postpaid, we're reintegrating CC, the postpaid business, into Cell C. So the legal entity will remain, but it's more on an operational level. So how do we show up with products in our retail footprint, in call centers? How do tariffs stack up? How do we actually run the business on gross additions, renewals, migrations, etc.? We think there's an opportunity there. I mean, that base has been in decline for 4 or 5 years now. So there's certainly an opportunity there to regain some of those customers. Mm-hmm. And then if you take in totality, we want to make sure that we go in the direction of leaning into what customers really want. So I've said this before, if I could take away T's and C's, I would. And we're going in that direction. So we're starting to implement things that will go in the direction of being less restrictive to a customer. Data is a classic example. You know, you have Nitel and daytime and this and that. And so you have to consider those things today, and we can't just be nonchalant and change stuff because they've got significant implications. But at least our product team and commercial team and thinking is all aligned to how do we, at least at some stage in the not too far distant future, start doing things that consumers really want and not making revenue from breakage and stuff like that.
Right.
So, or toxic revenues and things like that. So it's a... there's a little bit of uniqueness in there. And I think if we look at the propositions that we want to take to market, I've spoken a little bit about beyond voice and data. I think there's some opportunities there to start playing in that space.
How important is it to drive up your average revenue per user?
It's always very important. We've got a healthy one on the postpaid base. We've got a reasonable on prepaid. So I think that's important because you'd go after a real human being as opposed to this washing machine effect that happens in prepaid. And I think that's where you see ARPUs is kind of all over the show because you delete some customers and it's just a factor of revenue by that customer base. But real human beings or a SIM card in a real application, so whether it's vehicle tracking or in an iPad or any other piece of equipment that generates revenue, really used by a human being. Of course, you want to grow that. Mm-hmm. And so typically what you find in these markets is that not all customers are active every day on your network. And so you need some strategies to align and understand why are they not? Are they shopping somewhere else? Do they have multi-SIMs, which we know is very much rife in this market? So how do you get the secondary SIM and the third SIM that's spent onto your network? And so why is it that a customer would have three SIM cards at different networks for different things? We need to understand those and try and see if we can cater for all of their needs in one place.
Mm-hmm. Make that SIM their primary SIM.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So your bigger rivals are going into things beyond telecommunications, particularly fintech and financial services, mobile money, that sort of thing. But also, I mean, Vodacom's in the process of, if it's allowed to, buying into a fiber operator. You have a fiber ISP business. Do you stick largely to the telecommunications business, or do you also see opportunities in these ancillary businesses like mobile money?
There will be. What we're trying to do for now is what I call the parachute stuff. So if we get ahead of ourselves and start trying to do all these other things, I think we're not going to get the right level of focus. So we have to create sustainability with the core business. Mm-hmm. So that's priority one. Will there be revenue opportunities on these ancillary businesses and adjacent revenue streams? Absolutely. It's about how do you go after it. And I think We have certain views. We've discussed this inside our own organization. We've got quarterly strategic sessions where we start improving on the longer term play of what we're doing. I think there is opportunity in some of these. It's more the how you go to market with some of these products. Mm-hmm. So I'm not interested, for example, in video streaming platforms and so on. I think, you know, been there, done it, lost a lot of money.
Everyone has, it seems.
It does seem that the
media is difficult.
Absolutely. It's tough. It's not easy. Yeah. But there's no doubt in my mind that if you take, you know, mobile money in some or other format, insurances, and that there's definitely opportunities in different formats. It's how you show up. Who do you partner with? I certainly don't want to compete from a banking perspective with very, very good partners that we have in the form of Capitec Connect and FNB Connect. You know, so I'd hate to damage that relationship by doing products that is their core business. Mm-hmm. So that kind of alignment, I think, is key for us to decide what type of revenue streams. But I really do believe this, and I'm not going to give away too much, but today's ingredients or today's products, which is effectively voice and data, could be the ingredients of tomorrow's products. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an opportunity for some of that.
Okay. Just coming back to the ARPU question, the most lucrative customers in this market, I imagine, are the guys who are using iPhones. They're spending 1,000 Rand or 2,000 Rand or maybe even more every single month on their telecommunications needs. Is that a segment of the market that you can attract? Do you have the balance sheet to be able to buy those handsets and then sell them on to those customers?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're now in a position, it's not that we, you know, cash everywhere, but I think there's enough structures in place where you buy hardware, sell it, recover the revenue over 12, 24, 30, 36 months. There's financial institutions that take the book. Okay. So there's enough, if you look at payment terms, if you look at funding from banks and so on, there's enough there to not impede us any way whatsoever. What we want to do is we want to do the right business. So there's always that fine balance about how do you do your credit scoring? Because you can attract a lot of business and write off a lot of bad debt a few months later. So it's finding that balance. Again, if you look at the entities that we have in the group, I think we could very soon have, if not one of the best scorecards in the country with the data that's available. And I think there's an opportunity there to do scoring on a regular basis, live basis, that will improve the opportunity of gross additions, but also mitigate quite nicely for the potential bad debt that comes. So I think from that position, I don't see an issue at all. Mm-hmm. Are iPhone users spending more money than Samsung users or Huawei? I think that's not that obvious anymore. I think that was a thing of the past. Mm-hmm. I think the devices today are of such quality across a number of brands that what you can do with that device is a number of things, and that's what's generating a lot of the revenue.
Okay.
So it's not just Apple, but and not taking anything away from Apple, sure. But you see that kind of high spend across a number of brands.
Interesting. Now, it's been reported, I think we've reported, that you handed back some of the spectrum that you bid for in the 2022 spectrum auction. I think it was 10 megahertz at 3.5 gigahertz, correct. Is that right? Which I presume you wanted for 5G applications. Just walk me through why you had to hand that back. I presume it was a cash flow issue. Yeah. How disappointing was it for Cell C to have to hand that spectrum back?
Yeah, it was disappointing. A little bit of a saga for me because effectively the decision was already made before I arrived. I wasn't aware of it. So we had paid a deposit and had entered into a payment arrangement, and there had been correspondence between ourselves and the regulator. And with all the changes at the regulator and ourselves, I was under the impression that we had a payment arrangement. That was the latest information that we had. It turns out that we had already got notification that there's no payment arrangement, and therefore the spectrum was still with the regulator. So we didn't give it back. We never got it in the first place. We've entered into correspondence with the regulator now to say, what must we do? What's the process? Because you kind of have the deposit. Mm. We don't have the spectrum. Do we wait for the next round and then bid again? But for all intents and purposes, we don't have the spectrum. So that's gone.
So you can't use it.
We can't use it. We never have. We've got the 9, 18, and 2100.
Right. Okay. So, but is it your intention to continue to participate in spectrum auctions in South Africa?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And you believe you'll be in a position to participate in the next one, which I think is going to happen next year.
That's the intention. Mm-hmm. So we've done a lot of conversations and discussions with financial institutions and even with our board and shareholders. So in the event of spectrum auction, we definitely want to participate. We think it's absolutely a valuable asset, mm-hmm. and there's very good ways to monetize it.
Mm-hmm. I think I understand it, but perhaps you could explain again why a company that doesn't have its own radio access network needs its own spectrum.
Yeah. So effectively, this question has been asked a lot. We are a full mobile network operator. And I've been asked, but aren't you an MVNO? Well, we have our own spectrum. We have our own core. We have our own billing systems. We have our own customer experience management tools, data warehousing, all of that. So effectively, what we've given up is the physical radio access network, which is the base station with the panels on for the antennas. And that's the physical infrastructure. I mean, these days, a site, if it's not a rooftop, a physical lattice structure could be anything about 1.5 million.
Be a light pole.
Exactly. So it could be a light pole, could be a number of these things. So we've pulled out of that completely and have a virtual radio access network with MTN. And effectively, that's how we compete. But you need your own spectrum to be able to really use your own spectrum, which is effectively how you communicate, right? Mm-hmm. It's the air or the oxygen, if you like, of the industry. And so we have it for ourselves, and then we also generate some revenue from it from spectrum sharing arrangements.
Okay. And your prepaid customer base is effectively outsourced, if I can use that word, to MTN or to MTN's radio access network. And prepaid, postpaid is on Vodacom.
Yes. So that's largely how it is, although we have a multi-operator carrier network technology.
Right.
And so what we can do going forward is put traffic on one network or the other, irrespective of whether you're prepaid or postpaid.
That's the Mokken network.
Okay. Right. So that's we're actually testing at the moment on the one operator. The other operator has been in place for a while. Mm-hmm. And so that will effectively allow us to move traffic in the background if we want at a product level or at a geography level to make sure that we really give our customers the best of the best. And that's one of the unique things in the ingredients that I talk about with Cell C that puts us on the front foot. I mean, mm-hmm. if you look at our network quality now from a year ago, it's fundamentally different. It's completely improved. There's a number of independent reports that are out there, but we've come up first for video pretty much everywhere. And so from a network quality perspective, where we were a distant fourth a year ago and now being joint winners in number of categories, it just allows us to really give our customers a great quality of service when it comes to network infrastructure. And now with great pricing, great network, I think there's a nice opportunity for us.
Okay. So just explain to me then, just so I've got a clear picture in my head. I've got a Cell C SIM in my phone. I'm a prepaid customer. I make a phone call to someone on the Telkom network. How does that call get routed?
Yes, so effectively, I mean, you have originating a phone call goes through our own core, HLR systems, etc. They look for where you are, and they're looking for where you are could be on whatever network. If it's your own network, then you've got your on-net traffic, and that's got some regulation around that, what charges, what costs. If it's another network, then, of course, it has to go and find you in that network, and that's why terminating calls is a little bit more expensive than originating, because you're making a call from, you know exactly where it is. When you have to find someone, there's a lot of stuff that happens on the network, signaling that takes place. Effectively, the number that you're dialing has got to put up its hand and say, hey, I'm over here, and the phone call arrives. And that all happens through a number of pieces of technology. But for us, it's about making sure that, one, you can make that call quickly and of a good quality. So call setup success rate is good. The quality of the voice or data, depending if it's voice over IP, is good. And then we generate call data records, and that goes into billing. If it's prepaid, it deducts the money from your IN, which is effectively the intelligent network purse. It checks that you have money first. If it doesn't, you have other products like airtime advance. So if you've got a zero balance, we could loan you the money.
These are complicated
all
systems.
Real time.
These are complicated systems. And I can only imagine that Mokken is going to make it even more complicated.
It's more complicated, but it's better from a customer experience point of view. So if you get it right, the technology in the background, and that's why we're spending a considerable amount of time doing testing. We've done lab testing, we're now doing real testing, and then we'll roll it out in phases to make sure that it really works well. But you're quite right. The amount of activity that has to happen at a technology and system level in milliseconds when you generate a phone call or generate a data activity to go and validate things and check, is this IMEI, which is the serial number of the phone, blocked or not blocked? If it's a stolen handset, it gets blocked.
Wow.
So all these kind of things have to happen kind of real time. And that's where a lot of investment goes.
And store all this data for future reference.
Exactly.
And I presume there are disputes between the operators as well about you know, you owe me this for that. And
no, those are fairly aligned. I mean, there's not too much complication there, to be brutally honest. I think the systems are good and fairly accurate. But there's a lot that goes on at the same time. And, you know, it's technology. So errors do creep in, faults do happen and so on. And then you've got to go and rectify them.
So is the intention over time, once Mokken has been rolled out, that if I have a Cell C SIM in my phone, that that any Cell C customer will be able to roam on MTN or Vodacom, depending on network availability?
Yeah, so there's a couple of choices. The one is you're not going to get access to, say, 28,000. It's 14,000 base stations of each MTN and Vodacom. That would create absolute chaos. It's not real-time signaling. You're not looking for the best coverage at any particular point in time. It's what we do with it that allows us to move the traffic. So you could, for example, have a button on your phone that would allow a customer to move in the event of no signal of one to switch to the other, and they would have it.
While they're on a call?
No, not while they're on the call. Okay. But if there's zero signal in a particular geography on one network, you could do something on your phone, just press a button and you could get access to the other network. That's one way of doing it. The other way is that we do it seamlessly in the background, is to say, to give the best of the best consistently in a particular geography, one operator performs slightly better than the other. Let's move the traffic to that operator instead of the other one. Or you could do it at a product level and say, Home Connector Flex products, we want to make sure that they're on this network. These products, we want to make sure they're on that network, a fixed wireless access as an example. So there's a few methods of how you can commercialize it or how you can manage it. We've got a few of those options available to us. We just wanted to make sure that the underlying technology works well, and then we start implementing these strategies, which I think is a really unique way of doing things.
Could we get to a point where there's dynamic wholesale pricing so that you know, Vodacom and MTN systems or AIs or whatever they are competing with one another based on network load and offering prices to you as Cell C running on their network, so that perhaps MTN is overloaded in one area and it puts its price up. Vodacom's a bit cheaper because its network is not so much in demand, and therefore your subscriber's call gets routed through the Vodacom network because it's cheaper at that moment.
Yeah, I think. Look, technically, those things could be possible. I'm not sure we would want that, because that effectively introduces a different dynamic, which is your cost of production.
Right.
And if your cost of production is something that is dynamic, then what you charge customers and your contribution margin for that particular product could also have an implication. So what's critically important is that you know what is your cost to produce. Of course, if prices go down, everybody wants that. And generally, a lot of that is passed down to customers. You're seeing more and more value being given away for similar prices. So hanging on to the price points, giving away more value. But I think you need a little bit more consideration around how do these wholesale prices work, et cetera, because you need certainty to be able to use that as benchmark to price. So I think the model that we've got is good for now.
Okay.
I have no doubt that that those are questions that are good ones that will be asked in time, and whether we go down that route. If you're doing it for your own network, I can understand that in pockets. So kind of a site that's a very low utilization, you want to put products that are cheaper and attract customers there, because you've got effectively a sunk cost that's sitting there and you're not getting a return.
That's already happening on some of the
networks. That's already happening.
Okay. What about regulatory support or the regulatory environment? I know you've said that you've criticized ICASA's decision to end or propose to end the asymmetry in termination rates. I know this is a fairly technical issue, but a regulatory technical issue, but how important is that asymmetry to Cell C, and what support would you like to see, or changes rather, would you like to see in the policy and regulatory environment in South Africa that would help not only Cell C but the whole industry?
Yeah, I think the asymmetry needs to stay for now. So, I mean, I think contextually charging a little bit more for the calls on Cell C versus what you pay on the other networks, given the size of the voice traffic. If you take between the two big players, 80% of the circuit switch voice sits between those two networks. So effectively, they've got on-net strategies that are market dominant. You know, and this has happened, one, as a result of how we started the conversation right in the beginning, that when Cell C started, these termination rates were hiked. So a kind of false start for Cell C. So, you know, for me, I find it rather convenient that, you know, but you've been in the market for 22 years, you shouldn't get this benefit anymore. The reality is that, you know, market share is more of a factor rather than how long you've been around. Because you're always going to have then bigger players using their on-net strategy to effectively price down. And therefore, it makes it almost impossible from a voice point of view for smaller operators to compete with that. So removing asymmetry would be a no-no in terms of what we're looking for. I think the only situation that I think would be a win-win is to just keep it as is. There is currently asymmetry. There's a glide path for a number of years. I think that's a fair one. If we look at the Lyric model, which is effectively the cost-based model, that's fine, but what is it that you need to include? Because you've got the Lyric and you've got Lyric Plus, which is effectively other costs that you associate with originating and terminating phone calls. Lots of studies have been done on it. So I think whatever that cost is, if it's removed, I can guarantee you that the big operators will not pass that on to the subscriber. It's certainly just margin expansion that will take place. So I don't see that as a benefit to consumers by changing this regulation. And that's the point that we've made during the hearings is to say, you know, if that does go ahead, then ensure that gets passed down to the customers, but it won't. It definitely will not get passed on to the customers. It will just look at margin expansion.
So what sort of asymmetry benefit do you currently have? What is the percent?
4 cent
difference.
Differential.
Differential, okay. Is that, and if that differential was to go away, if ICASA's proposals were to go through as they stand, how impactful would that be on your business?
It's quite significant. I think for us, we've calculated somewhere between 270 and 300 million that then disappears. And, you know, Cell C has had the cheapest calling prices on circuit switch voice for more than 10 years. No one's followed. Mm. So if the logic is that this will bring prices down, the others have not brought prices down on circuit switch calling because you've got the dominance of the market share. You can just create an on-net strategy where, you know, a red-to-red phone call or a yellow-to-yellow phone call is on-net. There's no cost. Given your market share size, you can do that all day long. You've got no chance for the third and fourth player.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that Telkom is argued on the fixed side because they've got a different situation on the fixed. But for us on the mobile side, I think it has to remain asymmetrical until you reach a certain market share, I would say.
Okay, and what should that market share be?
I would say north of 20%. You know, okay. if you look at because then you're starting to compete almost like for like in terms of your market share size, number of customers versus voice traffic. It is a declining revenue stream, so there's no doubt that, you know, more and more calls are going to be made on WhatsApp, and so therefore removing this revenue from circuit switch. But I think whilst it's still there, you need to protect that revenue stream and doing it so in a responsible way, taking good prices to the market. So, and that's the dilemma that we have, is we've done the good prices to the market, you've gone down that direction, you got a little bit of benefit on asymmetry. No one's followed you because they've got the on-net calling size of the customer base. So why the changes? You know, it's not necessary.
Is there an argument to be made that maybe MTR should be done away with entirely and that the ICASA just says, okay, everyone in the market whose license has to interoperate?
That's also fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would also be fine. I mean, ultimately that may happen. The reality is there is a cost to terminate and so on. So, you know, whether that goes away entirely or whether there's a study that says this is a particular cost. But I think in time, those will all be reviewed,
okay,
to be honest.
Okay. Now, I wanted to chat a little bit about your MVNO business. You've touched on it already to some extent, and you've suggested it's an important part of your business. How do you see it growing in the years to come? I mean, the MVNO market is evolving. We've seen MTN come into the market with an MVNO platform, and I think Telkom and Vodacom are required to launch MVNOs in terms of their spectrum licenses under the 2022 auction. I'm not sure what the deadline for that is, but I think it's coming up sometime in the next year or so. So the market is changing. What does that mean for Cell C?
I think it's a good thing, to be brutally honest. A lot of MVNOs have come and gone and didn't make it. Strong brands.
Virgin Mobile, the first one.
Exactly. Mm. Virgin, Red Bull, Trace Music and so on. So for me, it's about how do these businesses really integrate into their core. So if an MVNO is launched purely for discounted voice and data, then that's not a good strategy. If you want to reward your existing core business with voice or data products, then, you know, there's many ways that you can do that. If you deeply want to integrate into your business and make telephony or data usage critical component of whatever else you do, whether you're a retailer or a bank, then I think you start unlocking some significant value. And I think that's what we're now doing more and more with the key partners that we've got and really aligning on how do we execute properly. So this is no longer a game of, yes, some wholesale prices, off you go, do your thing. If you succeed, great. If you don't succeed, no. We want to make sure that we partner deeply and properly. I think it's going to grow fundamentally. I don't think it's going to get worse. I think it's going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what gives us a significant opportunity is that, you know, I've often been asked, is there enough margin? Given we've got a roaming deal, can we still pass this on? The reality is we can. Our financial model is slightly different. So we've swapped CapEx for OpEx, if you like. But there's enough margin to make sure that you can still give your MVNO partners enough margin for their business to go and compete favorably.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you integrate deeply, I mean, think of a banking customer that has a particular network and uses their banking app to buy airtime that way. That banking customer can easily be convinced to switch across to their own MVNO product.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, unlock a number of benefits, whatever those benefits might be in their core business, and then vice versa. But when you align these behaviors, I think there's an unbelievable amount of opportunity for MVNO growth. But it's got to be dealt with in a proper structured way. This is no longer flavor of the month. Everybody, you know, if you've got a Biltong shop, you're not going to get an MVNO. I don't think there's a model for that. And then I think there's some opportunities in enterprise as well. I think that's largely untapped. Enterprise MVNO, especially for enterprises that have got large staff member, exactly, workforces. I think there's some nice opportunities there. And then when you align value-added services and products, you know, if you take Capitec Connect as an example, you know, they've got an Airtime Advance product now, right? So now even at that MVNO level, you're competing with what the MNOs have got available. You hit a zero balance and you get given an opportunity to use the product, and then the next time there's a fee that gets taken off. But so you will start seeing a lot more capability. If you take FNB, if you look at financing of handsets, they're a big player in the hardware space. They do that really well, and they've done that exceptionally well over a number of years. That competes like for like with a full mobile network operator. So more and more, I think, of these kind of organizations that integrate more deeply will make it very successful. You're quite right. The last round of the spectrum auction required each mobile network operator to have one MVNO and guarantee their success for 3 years. Now, the definition of success is unfortunately a bit loose, and the timing, as you've mentioned, but that was a part of the regulation that was required to be fulfilled, or obligations, as part of the last round of spectrum. So let's see how that goes.
Yeah, some of the operators certainly seem to be taking their time to get these MVNOs off the ground, which makes you wonder how committed they are to the MVNO model. But what does the size of the MVNO market in, say, Europe or North America tell us about what the opportunity still here is in South Africa? And do you know, off the top of your head, perhaps an unfair question to ask you this without preparing you, but do you know what percentage of the market in South Africa is currently sitting with MVNOs?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we see numbers on an HLR range, and then what happens is the MVNOs do what they want with their own rules and products and so on. So if they never delete a customer, then you'll have subscriber growth.
Mm-hmm.
If they churn customers that don't use the voice or data services after X days or months or weeks, then you'll see a different number. So it's a difficult one to tell. They will have to talk about their numbers themselves because they've got their own rules.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're seeing is we're seeing 20% revenue growth in that space. I'm seeing exiting at 76% traffic. We've repriced that and restructured that. I think that's going to accelerate to over 100%
wow.
traffic growth. And they will monetize it. So I think there's lots of headroom and runway in the MVNO business. I know that in Europe, in certain markets, it's actually created the, I don't want to say collapse, but the downfall, if you like, of a number of proper MNOs, because the MVNOs were in such volume and did some really interesting things that it made it difficult for the network operators to kind of compete. So this is the dilemma, right? The dilemma is we're seeing, and we have absolute percentages, we're seeing a small percentage, and that's somewhere around 12, to be specific, of Cell C customers that join MVNOs. And if those MVNOs are with us, then effectively we get that revenue back in a different way.
Right.
But the reality is 80-odd% is available from the other network operators. So for me, it's a very deliberate strategy to go after this market because I've got much more to gain than to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And if we give customers real products that they want with great value on the back of great quality networks, great pricing, with these very strong brands in their own rights, I think there's lots of scope for growth there.
George, looking ahead then, I don't know how long your contract is with CellC, and I don't know if you even want to share that with me, but let's say 5 years from now, how should people judge you on whether you've been successful or not as the leader of CellC? What are the metrics that you're measuring yourself against, and perhaps the board is measuring you against as well? 5 years from now, what will this business look like? What will you have want to have achieved? Maybe just a bit of color on that.
Yeah, that's a really good question. My contract is not a specific time frame, so I'm employed forever as long as I deliver, I guess, like anybody else. How should they judge me favorably, ideally? No, but on a serious note, I think fast forward 5 years, for sure we need to be financially sustainable. Okay, so I'm looking for growth in a sustainable way, chiseling away all the time, no flash in the pan magic. You know, I think we cannot afford that. We need credibility in the business. So good, sustainable growth, and that needs to be financial sustainability, right? No one ever went bankrupt by having cash in the till. So we need to make sure that from a cash position, we're fundamentally different in a sustainable way. That's a key thing. The second thing is around the team and the culture. I'm really big on this. I think we're doing a lot to make sure that we have an amazing culture. I would love for us to have the best culture in the country of any organization. So this is not an industry thing. And what I'm looking for there is a team that subscribes to our principles, which is trust, honesty, integrity, and simplicity. So when we do a deal and we shake hands, the deal is done. The four squares that we spoke about is what's in the agreement. You're not going to get the agreement, then it suddenly says three green triangles. Mm-hmm. It's got to be transparent, and it's got to be honest, and we've got to do business with integrity. I want customer centricity to be at the heart of our decisions. So fast forward 5 years from now, there must be a number of products that CellC has put into the market that have changed the way consumers see the telecommunications industry. So removing some T's and C's, giving customers what they really want, making it more simple, really aligning with them. We want to make sure that we have an ally in both directions, right, with our customers and business partners and ourselves to be there supporting them and enriching their lives through technology, making a real difference. So we want to be profitable for sure, but there's an acceptable level of profitability. I think, you know, we have shareholders that will accept a decent return, and it doesn't have to be ludicrous. Mm-hmm. So doing all the right stuff. So I would say probably sustainable growth for sure. The way we measure the team, is there good succession? Is the culture right? Have we done business in an honest, transparent way? Do we have, you know, that 5-star badge for ethical business? I think that's critical. We need to do a little bit more from a foundation point of view. I think funding has been a challenge, but how do we leave the planet in a better place than we found it? How do we improve education through technology? I think there's some important factors there, and we need to make those contributions and make sure that we add value in that way. But I think the success will be, you know, revenue shares, market shares, those kind of KPIs, the culture, the way in which we've delivered, and really been progressive on certain things. We've started now with some policies like unlimited leave. It's an experiment that we're busy with in a couple of levels in the organization. And then in time, we'll see whether we expand it to everybody and just, you know, learn as we go along, and really have some progressive policies in place. I think we have to change the old way of doing stuff, not just because we have to change, but you take this leave policy as an example. I genuinely don't believe that it's possible for someone to work 330 days and then take 2 weeks leave and be completely rejuvenated and come back again and have another go. I don't see that. I see regular breaks. You know, if you exercise for 1 or 2 minutes a day, surely that's got to be better than exercising for 24 hours once a year. I just think that those philosophies have to be changed. And so we will have disrupted. I think there will be definitely some MVNO success. There's no doubt in my mind that we would have taken significant share through MVNOs in 5 years' time. We'll have a reasonable enterprise business. And again, we've started very small, so I think there'll be a nice piece of enterprise business that we will have built up, and I think that will also show some nice success. And we'll have integrated a number of products that are not core today that I think will start changing the game. It might be possible that even in the future, 20-30% of our revenues are not coming from anything that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
And then we could replicate this model, you know, so we're not getting ahead of ourselves. We have to fix here and really make sure that we concentrate all our efforts here. But, you know, when you look at markets that are fairly saturated, you know, 3-4 players, I think it could be replicated.
Now, I referred to this as your payoff line to your chief marketing officer, Melanie Forbes, the other day. She admonished me and called it something else. I think it was a call to action or something. Yeah. But I do like it. A switch to C is your, it's not your payoff line, it's your something else.
Campaign, yes.
Your campaign line. Mm. But just lastly, George, as we wrap up this interview, if someone approaches you and say, and is on one of the other networks and asks you, well, why should I switch to Cell C? What do you tell them?
I tell them what I tell my family, my friends, my business partners. Every restaurant that I eat at, every waiter that I speak to, I'm on a mission. We're changing everybody. And the answer is quite simple. Come to Cell C. You're going to get the best prices on the best of the best network, the most reliable and the fastest, with unbelievable experience. So you don't need to mitigate for risk anymore, right? You got great value on the best of the best with a great experience. There's still other things that I don't want to talk about today that's coming in terms of products that will allow us to amplify that even more. But I think at the core, we can compete super, super favorable. We are a South African brand. Mm-hmm. We have been a brand that's been around for 22 years. We've been an admired brand. And I think people, strangely enough, I've seen this in social media, I was surprised. Customers really love our brand. They actually defend the brand on our behalf when somebody says something derogatory or you know, and it's quite surprising. I've not seen this before. So there's something quite unique about Cell C. And I think we want to stand for real customer centricity. When we have meetings in our organization and there's a customer issue, a problem that comes to our attention, the meeting stops, person gets out of the room, sorts out the issue and comes back. That's what we want to strive for. Now, it's a journey. I'm not over the moon with how we've showed up in recent years. Are we perfect in retail? Definitely not. Do we want to improve that fundamentally? Absolutely. One of the ambitions is to make sure that we've got the best experience. So customers coming into our stores or engaging with us at a call center and so on really feel that we've got their best interest at heart and that we've got a great attitude to make sure that we deliver what's right for them as opposed to trying to defend a policy or trying to defend a product. So I think all those ingredients make it kind of an easy choice, right? You can come to Cell C, get a dual SIM device, get great products, great prices, best of the best network. Why would you go anywhere else?
Mm-hmm. And wait for the mock and roaming.
Absolutely.
George Mendes is CEO of Cell C. Best of luck. And thank you so much for coming to visit Tech Central today.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.